This is episode 56 of the Evolve Marriage Podcast. Today, we're interviewing Sathya Sam. I'm actually flying solo for this episode, and I'm talking to Sathya all about porn addiction, which is something he really knows a lot about. He not only has a really popular podcast, which he actually hosts daily, which is pretty awesome, and he just released a book, which we talk about in the episode itself. So we really talk about how porn is often kind of like fast food, if you will, really how it comes from a deficiency in intimacy. We also obviously talk about the impact it can have on marriages and how to really open up to your partner about your addiction, and even as the partner, how to receive it. So I hope you really enjoy this great conversation and you really get some value out of it if you know somebody who's struggling with this.
Hi, I'm Kate McDougall.
And I'm Eric McDougall, certified master coach.
And this is the Evolved Marriage Podcast,
where every week you learn valuable skills to help you evolve your marriage so your best years together are ahead of you. Here we go. All right, everyone. Welcome to the Evolved Marriage Podcast. Today, I'm really excited and honored to have Sathya Sam on the podcast. Sathya runs a podcast called Unleash the Man Within, and is also an author of an amazing book called The Last Relapse, specifically talking about porn addiction in men and how it impacts marriage. So welcome, Sathya.
Thanks for having me, Eric. Great to be here.
So I always start with my first question to all my guests is, what's an area of your life that you're currently growing in, that you're currently evolving, so you can impact, you know, the way you show up as a husband, as a man in the world?
Oh man, that's a great question. So right before we hit record, I had mentioned that I'm based out of Toronto, Canada, fellow Ontarian here, but I currently live in Jamaica with my wife. We've been here the last 6 months, and that's mostly because my wife is Jamaican. She's homesick and her family's here, and all the work I do is online. So we were able to just kind of pull this off, a little bit fortunate that way. But, you know, living in transiency can be really difficult. And before we actually moved to Jamaica, we moved out of our house because we had rented it out to some people. So we were living with my parents for a few weeks, just living out of a suitcase. And then we moved here. We lived with her parents for a little bit before we got our own place. And we're getting ready to go back now. And there's just like all these temporary arrangements. And one of the things that I've been learning is just how transition can bring out the best and worst in people. And my wife and I have really had to consciously extend a lot of grace and kindness towards each other, just because things are slipping through the cracks and we're feeling the stress of trying to say bye to people before we leave, and logistics of traveling and everything, man. So I think one of the things I'm learning is really to just to not be such a perfectionist about things. It's okay if things slip through the cracks, and to really to lead with grace and mercy first before getting too worked out about, you know, small details that are pretty irrelevant in the long run. So I think that's how I'm learning a little bit these days.
Dude, I appreciate you sharing that, man. And I can imagine having all these interpersonal relationships from your extended family, you know, not only being with your parents, but then also living with your wife's parents. I mean, it adds a lot, right? Not only tension, but also, you know, freedom. I'm sure they're there supporting you in so many ways, but it's a lot to navigate.
Yeah, tons to navigate. And even just like, you know, when you're not like living in your normal home arrangement, like when you're away from home or any of that kind of stuff, living out of a suitcase, it's just the things that you're just normally used to. Like I like drink like 3-4 liters of water a day. And in this new place we've been living, it's really hard to just get filtered water. So like just little things that get under your skin and make you a bad person. And anyways, just working through some of those dynamics, man.
Awesome, dude. I appreciate you sharing that. So I'm really, really excited to dive into the topic, this idea of porn addiction, right, that you talk about. And you've done a lot of healing with a lot of men through your coaching and stuff like that. But I guess, you know, the foundation of the conversation before we dive into it is really you talk about this idea that addiction is rooted in intimacy deficiency. So I'd love for you, maybe number one, talk about, you know, what exactly you mean by intimacy, first of all, right, when that shows up in our relationships. And how do you kind of link these two where you see that addiction is rooted in a deficiency of that?
Yeah, it's a fantastic question. So I believe every person is born with four core needs. I talk about this in the book. It's the basics: food, shelter, water. It's security, significance, and the fourth is intimacy. My personal conviction is that intimacy is the need of all needs, because, you know, everything that the research is discovering and everything else is really pointing that we are social more than anything else. We need connection. And I think when people don't experience intimacy at a young age, intimacy being really deep, meaningful connection in a way that's appropriate for the nature of the relationship. So when it's obviously when you're just growing up in this world between a parent and child, if you as a child do not receive that intimacy from your parents, just that close connection on, again, it's a physical level, it's touch, you know, when you're a baby, obviously an emotional level as you start to develop, and all the other ways that parents provide for their kids. If you receive, or if you don't receive what you need, you know, to feel sufficient, to feel, you know, fully met in that way, you will find another way to get it met. That is the nature of a core need. It cannot go unmet. One way or another, it gets met. Sometimes the ways are healthy, sometimes they're unhealthy. Now, let's not kid ourselves. There's no such thing as a perfect parent. I'll put myself on the hot seat a little bit. I'm not a parent myself, but I was parented by two incredible people growing up who really took very good care of me. But despite that, I would say I did grow up with an intimacy deficiency, not tons of emotional connection, especially with my mother. Just, again, one of those dynamics. In my healing journey, what I realized is that when I started to reach my teenage years, of course, boys chase girls. That's just what you do when you're a teenage boy. And it looks, on the surface, you can see a couple different, you look at a couple different guys who are all in this just chase of girls and this obsession with girls and whatever, and it all just looks normal and the same. But for me, it became very clear in my adult years that actually I was compensating. I was compensating for a lack of intimacy from a younger age, specifically from my maternal figure. So, you know, you chase girls when you're in high school, but by the time I was in university, it became a full-out porn addiction. And again, you think that's so weird. How do those connect? But for me, pornography was a place where I did experience intimacy. It was a place where I felt like I could receive female acceptance without any risk of rejection. And so it was satiating that need within me in a very toxic way, mind you. We kind of equate porn to being fast food intimacy. Temporarily meets the need, but leaves you hungrier afterwards. And that was certainly the case for me. And a huge part of my recovery journey was, I would say, uncovering some of this earlier wounding and some of these dynamics that were at play, and then learning to instill healthier ways to get those same fundamental core needs met.
Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing that. And, you know, as you were going through this journey and you're clearly evolving and growing, you know, with this addiction kind of being in the background, probably at some points right in the forefront, at what point did you realize that this was actually not only impacting you, but also impacting your closest relationships?
Wow. I think it was pretty obvious when I got a little bit further along in my degree, pursuing my education, because it started to impact the way I interacted with other people. I would say it hindered or limited my capacity for being present in the moment and just having meaningful emotional connection with other people, whether it was friends, romantic partners, or family. One of my mentors, I'm very fortunate to have encountered this when I was single, but one of my mentors said, hey, just so you know, marriage is a magnifier. So I think some people think some of these nuances and awkward issues, especially around sexuality, that they just kind of solve themselves when you get into a long-term committed relationship where you're having sex regularly and you have one partner and, you know, everything's good. And I was certainly of that mindset. And in my case, you know, for my personal beliefs was that I would save sex for marriage. So I thought, okay, once I get married, perfect. Then I won't have to deal with pornography. I won't be going there because the need will be getting met that way. And, you know, logically, it all makes sense. He basically said, hey, just so you know, if you have those kinds of dynamics in your life when you're single, marriage is a magnifier. It simply exposes and amplifies those issues on the other side. And that really incentivized me. I wanted to get married. I wanted to have a healthy marriage. And it was something that I always asked people when I was younger. I had some friends who got married very young. So when I would hang out with them, I'd say, what are you learning about marriage? You got any tips? You know, it was always interesting to me. And I didn't connect the dots that having a struggle with pornography could be so detrimental to a future marriage. And that was sort of the incentive of like seeing that it was already impacting some of my close relationships and realizing, just trusting my mentor enough to know, okay, I better do something about this now before I get into a more serious relationship.
You know, as you're talking about this idea of intimacy deficiency and kind of how you grew up, which I think a lot of us, you know, could relate to a similar story in one way or another. I often think about, you know, when I got married to my wife, Kate, you know, getting that close to another human being, like you're saying, magnified a lot of my own insecurities. Yes, there was a lot of greatness. There was a lot of positivity to it. But the reality is, you know, when you get deeply intimate with another person, you're putting yourself out there and they see you in a way that maybe is scary to be seen, which then amplifies the amount of codependency you have on some of these addictions, right? I did this through my life with alcohol and kind of fell into that. But it's pretty crazy that you have this amount of awareness. And so I guess my question is, you know, as you've been working with, you know, people over the last 15 years or so, what is really the catalyst for this change from going to pornography addiction to opening up and really starting to heal this?
Yeah, it's a layered subject to talk about porn in the context of a marriage. There's obviously lots of different opinions. I think most places around the world, pornography has become quite common. It's widespread. I mean, the stats show that about 35% of all downloads on the internet are pornographic. So I don't think it's any mistake. Like, we know that people are watching this. In a marriage context, usually porn is introduced to sort of spice things up. And I totally get the sentiment because I think that is the nature of long-term marriage and, you know, you're having sex with one person. So, of of course, you need variety. We're just wired that way. We don't want the mundane, certainly not for extended periods of time. So I completely get the sentiment of why people would maybe consider or entertain that kind of thought. The difficulty is that when you are accustomed, so let's say as an example, you do just get in that habit of introducing pornography to maybe get the ball rolling as sort of a catalyst. What you're actually doing is you're conditioning yourself to get aroused to somebody other than your significant other. So there are studies out there, rather, longitudinal studies that show early on when couples introduce porn into a marriage or a committed relationship, rather, that initially the reported relationship satisfaction and some of those markers is higher, which makes perfect sense. There's kind of this thrill and this excitement. However, long term, if you follow these couples long enough, gradually over time, relationship satisfaction plummets. And there is actually research that shows you're 3 times as likely to get divorced when just one person is watching porn in the marriage, let alone two. So it's this weird sort of nuanced thing. We can kind of logically understand why people might introduce it. But even if you tease apart the morality, the research is now showing that for long-term committed relationships to really stand the test of time, things like pornography are actually doing more harm than good. So I hope that answers that first part of the question, Eric.
Yeah, and probably even deeper than that, I think thinking about a man, is at home, or maybe in some cases a woman, but, a partner's mm-hmm. at home, they have this, dependency on pornography, and they don't really know what to do. So I guess maybe share your story about what was the catalyst for you starting to not only reach out and get help, but really starting to move towards healing a lot of these, addictions that you had.
Yeah. So let me start by saying that one of the things people don't realize, especially when you're married, if you're watching porn regularly and your partner's not aware, you have 2 options. You can confess or you can be caught. And so for me, I chose to confess when I was single. I didn't necessarily have the risk of a loved one looking over my shoulder and catching me. But I chose to confess. I chose to reach out and get some help. The scariest moment of my life, because you risk rejection. People might see you differently. You might get ostracized. I was actually a pastor of a local church at the time. So I risked my own job. There was a lot at stake here to having an issue like that. And it was very, very scary. But once again, just thinking about if I don't, and I choose to kind of stay on this path where I'm binging and purging. That's the classic addiction term. I was in the binge purge cycle, wasn't actually shaking loose of the addiction. It was only a matter of time before something would either get worse or I would get caught. Either way, this thing's only going to get worse if I don't do something about it. So I think people need to start by confessing. Your loved one deserves to know. That's just the reality. They don't have to be the first person you tell. My personal recommendation is the first person you tell is the safest person that you can think of. So if I ask you who's the safest person in your life, that's where you start. Talk to them. That's going to give you an idea of just, I guess, to verbally process, get the weight off your shoulders. And that person might be your spouse. So if it is, so be it. If it's not, that's okay. And then you work towards the goal of having that conversation with them eventually. That's something we walk people through a little bit if they need it. But that would be kind of my recommendation for somebody who's in that position.
What would you recommend? I mean, a spouse does, right? When you receive this, I think obviously it takes a lot of courage, right? What you were talking about, probably one of the scariest moments in your life. This is courageous action, right? What you did, getting out there, revealing a lot of these things that were going on. So, I think it's important to have that courage. Yes, I 100% agree with you, opening up and sharing that with somebody that you love, who's close to you. But probably even deeper than that, as a partner who maybe is seeing their husband struggle with porn, maybe, something's going on, how do you kind of breach that topic in order to help them open up?
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes back to the same thing I was saying earlier. It really comes back to safety. The safer somebody feels with you, the more likely they are to open up about whether it's a porn addiction or it's something else. And I think, for a partner, like when a partner starts to speculate and have those thoughts, they don't want to have those thoughts. Like that's a scary reality to confront. And if they do bring up the conversation, usually what they're trying to do is they're hoping for the best. And what I would actually encourage people to do is say, actually, it might be good to just confront the reality and say, if this is a thing, how am I going to respond? That would be a good place to start. And on the other side, when guys are struggling, we always tell them this. We're like, hey, when you have that conversation, a lot of guys go in being like, I think if I say it this way, she's not going to be so mad. And it's like, hey, the goal is not to reduce her anger. That's not the point of this conversation. She or he is allowed to be angry. This is upsetting news to hear. your responsibility is to figure out how you're going to not defend yourself, maybe what it's like to be in their footsteps or in their shoes to hear this kind of news, and just to be honest and to let them process and deal with it. So I think there's two sides of it, but it all really boils down for someone who's maybe speculative, wants to create that space, just be safe, bring the subject up gently. You can try to kind of give them a chance, so to speak, and give them a teaser, but they do have to share when they feel comfortable. And I don't think it's something that you can really force out of them.
Yeah, I agree. And I love that you're talking about this idea of allowing them to hold on to their own emotional experience, right? As a partner who's receiving this news, because Kate and I, you know, my wife and I, we're huge proponents of differentiation and allowing your partner to have that experience and not trying to control them emotionally, if you will, by your outputs. So I love that you touched on that. I would also love to hear, I think oftentimes we're avoiding this conversation because we don't want to hurt our partner, because it's framed in a way that, you know, from the wife, well, my husband's looking at porn because I'm not providing, or I don't look like that. And so based on the research that you've done, you know, I'd love to hear what's actually happening as we're experiencing this addiction, as we're watching this, what is it actually providing for men?
Wow. That's a really layered question. I think connection is certainly at the heart of it. Like I said, I think a lot of people go there for connection. I think it also provides an outlet. You know, a lot of the guys that come to us are emotionally numb. They do not want to face the reality of their stresses in life, maybe pain that they're facing in life. And so porn is an easy escape. Some guys have conditioned themselves to watch porn just to fall asleep. They can't do it without falling asleep. So there's all kinds of layers of programming that I think have caused people to become quite dependent on it. It starts initially by meeting that need, but porn is what they call a super stimulus. And that super stimulus releases unnatural levels of dopamine in the brain. And it makes us coming back wanting more of it, more and more and more. And I think that's a huge problem. The other side of this that I think is actually quite telling. In 2001, Eric, the rate of erectile dysfunction in men under the age of 40 was about 5%, which is what you would expect. That would be an anomaly for somebody that age who's really at the peak of their sexual development and their adult life. Today, the rate of erectile dysfunction in that same demographic, men under the age of 40, is reported to be as high as 33%, one of every three. And 2001 is where we saw an increase, like it started to, I would say, go up. That was when there was a spread of broadband internet. In 2007, you can see that even get a little bit steeper. And that, of course, was when the smartphone started to popularize. And again, I'm drawing my own conclusions. Other people might look at that data, and I think there are other factors. It's not exclusively pornography, but I think it's evident that it's playing a clear role in this dynamic, and it's affecting people at younger and younger ages. So I think people get hooked on it for different reasons. Like I said, it's the thrill, it's numbing, it's finding connection, it's a place where they can feel accepted, whatever it might be. That's what draws people to it, but then they end up getting hooked on it. Their brains and their bodies develop that dependency, and then on the back end, you're dealing with things like sexual misperformance, worse, more extreme sexual misbehavior, and then the ripples that come with that relationally, societally, mentally, vocationally, and everything else.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that you talked about this idea, you know, that it's not always coming from this place of, you know, I'm, you know, horny and I need to kind of tap into that. I've spoken to a lot of men, and a lot of it, like you're talking about, sometimes it's just boredom. And I don't know what to do in a space of boredom. I need a bit of that quick dopamine hit. And so they go to kind of this bottomless pit without actually realizing what it's doing long term. And so I guess as we're kind of wrapping up the episode, I'd love to hear, you know, you work with a lot of men, you've helped a lot of men heal through this. And Kate and I are all about, you know, what we're creating and what we're moving towards. So what are some of the impacts that you've seen men create in their own lives by removing this addiction and really opening up and healing this? What have they been able to really achieve and move towards in their own lives?
Honestly, it is wild. It is absolutely wild what happens when guys start to get the stuff out of their lives. So I have one client, he's a software engineer. His fiance or his girlfriend actually basically said, look, if you're taking this thing seriously and you want to propose to me one day, you can't be watching porn. Like, kind of just gave the ultimatum. So he started to clean his life up. He also was involved in church. He was a choir director and felt just incredible amounts of shame for kind of being this hypocrite, being seen as a leader in sort of a faith-based position, but having this behind closed doors. So two really huge incentives for him. And it's funny, so he got clean. I think it's been about 10 months now for him. He's about to get married. Actually, I think he might get married this weekend or next weekend as we're recording this. So awesome. He's getting married. You know, his girlfriend is super happy, fiance now, soon to be wife. And the cool thing is that he actually is not back in the church position. He decides to step down because what he realized in getting free of pornography is that he was actually not taking good care of himself and that he was a chronic people pleaser. And he wanted to quit that position a long time ago, but he was afraid of letting people down. And as he healed, he started to develop a deeper sense of self-worth, the ability to draw boundaries, and really worked over this fear of people rejecting him, you know, just learning to love and accept himself. And he was able to step down from that position, you know, and I was so proud of him for doing that, for just making a decision for himself, regardless of people's negative responses. So I think those are things that happen at an interpersonal level. I had a recent client who, you know, basically just found his confidence after he started to get free. This was even before he was fully free, but he was just making progress. He could see the light at the end of the tunnel again. And he said he felt like he found himself again, you know? And so he quit his job. He started a business that he had been dreaming about starting for a very long time. And his wife is from a different country. They'd always talked about moving there, but there was a lot of risk involved and he was a little bit scared. And he made the leap. And the wheels are in motion. It takes a while for the papers to process. But he's just doing those things that were kind of dormant because of his addiction. But now that he has his confidence back, now that he feels like he can conquer the world, he's starting a business. He's ready to move his family of six. He has four kids across the country, or to a different country rather. And, you know, whatever the decisions look like, the cool part is the confidence, you know, just finding that sense of self again. So these are the kinds of things that we're witnessing in our community as guys are getting free.
Dude, I absolutely love the work that you're doing with men. And I think it's really amazing that when you decide to stop numbing out, right, and stop kind of having these codependent behaviors with these different things, that you're really able to put some of that energy out into the world in a creative way, in a purposeful way. And I think, you know, as men, we don't talk a lot about it because I think there's so many things in our society that are designed to kind of numb us out and have us kind of zone out and be content zombies. But we forget that, like, we have this energy within us and we can choose where to harness it and direct it, which it sounds like a lot of your clients are doing in a really powerful way.
Yeah, that's really well said. And I think people don't realize when you are watching porn that you're giving some of your best energy, arguably, to a black hole. You know what I mean? You get nothing in return for that. Mm-hmm. And you're right. Like, when you do eliminate some of these toxic outlets, you find much more meaningful things to really channel your energy, invest your resources in. It's a beautiful thing. And I'm the product of that too. You know, like, I've been clean for 6 years and I would not have been able to dream about impacting people the way we've been able to here at Deep Clean without it. So it's really cool what happens.
Awesome, man. Well, dude, I really appreciate this conversation. Where can people find you? I mean, what are you putting out into the world? Where can people find your book? Where's the best place for us to direct our audience?
Yeah, where I would love people to go is thelastrelapsebook.com. The Last Relapse is the title of it. You can get a free download of my book there, and then that'll kind of direct you to some of our other resources. We have a daily podcast, newsletter, some private communities and stuff people can be a part of, but thelastrelapsebook.com, that's the best place to get started.
Sathya, man, I really appreciate you being on our podcast, giving us your time. I know how busy you are down in Jamaica, you know, doing all these things. But I think it's a really, really important topic for men. And I think we need to stop kind of having it be deep in the shadows here and really bring it to consciousness and talk about it being an issue and how it impacts relationships. So I really appreciate the work you put in the world. And I really appreciate you being on here today, man.
Oh, thanks, man. Likewise, love what you guys are doing and cheering you on. Appreciate you having me.
All right. Cheers.
All right, listeners, that's it for us today. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you did enjoy this episode, please leave a rating and review or share it with somebody you love so they can get some value out of it. Next week, if you are interested, so that's Thursday the 21st, I'm hosting a live workshop over Zoom. I will add the registration link in the show notes here. It's at 1:30 p.m. Eastern time. It'll go on for an hour. This is going to be three communication tools that are really going to allow your wife to feel seen, heard, and wanted. So this is really about reducing conflict and really creating intimacy in your marriage with these three simple communication skills that we use in our marriage. So if you want any of that information, it'll all be in the show notes. Otherwise, we look forward to seeing you next week. All right, cheers.